from Knockanool to Ardmore, so much to do and see. I'm delighted to welcome back our resident historian, Michael Brooks. Mike, you're very, very welcome back to the programme again.
Thank you very much, all. Thank you very much.
Michael, this week, the harbour area between Knockadoon to Ardmore and its wrecks, it's something that we didn't touch on, and we've been threatening to touch on it.
We've been we've threatened for a while, I suppose, Noel, because but other things took over. There was a lot of 100 anniversaries and all that.
Yes.
And they kind of took over a bit from this kind of story as well. And it was one that I was kind of looking forward to doing myself as well anyway.
Yes.
Do you know something, Noel? We're very, very lucky here because there was the John Young was obviously with COY at Dungarvan. You know not a hell of a lot more than I do.
He was with us, I suppose, since 1996, 1997.
And unfortunately, he's deceased.
Unfortunately. But what a legacy he left, actually.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And it was, you know, we're all kind of waiting still for the museum to come, and every single page that he's left, and he left boxes of it, and mainly maritime as well, Noel. So it is absolutely fantastic. And everything kind of I'm doing today, this morning, is from the John Young collection as well, anyway. And there's just so much there will be taken from that for a long time as well, anyway. You know,
well, it's the title of the series, So Much to Do and See. And there's so much in this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's loads more. Like, John was obviously a Dungarvan man, so there was a lot of information from the Dungarvan side. We're not going to go into the Dungarvan side, but we're going to do from Knockadoon to Ardmore anyway, definitely at this stage.
Yes.
But kind of between Knockadoon and Ardmore and the whole harbour area and all this as well. And again, if anybody's ever interested afterwards, you know, just chatting about it, you know, I'd be delighted to talk to you guys as well about it afterwards as well. There's no problems. But anyway, as I said, from this, but I just kind of, do you know something, Noel? We did Ardmore there recently, and it was, I really liked enjoying doing it because there was so much in Ardmore that I didn't know about myself.
Exactly. We've got this from our listenership because people have contacted the station and contacted me personally and said, I had no idea what went on in Ardmore.
I went into Ardmore there recently and I said, Jesus, this is a different place than I, you know the way.
You'd have exactly. When you know so much about it, know so much research, you'd have a different outlook on it.
Absolutely,
wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. But one of the things, because I was up at the church, you know the way, the graveyard up the hill, the round tower and all that.
Yes.
And it was only when I was kind of looking, we were talking about, I don't know if anybody remembers it, we're talking about the glen at the back, you know,
That's right, yeah.
And I went down to the back wall and there was a grave. And this is where I kind of wanted to start this morning as well with everybody. And there was a grave and it's called the Loss of the SS Arry. And it was the grave of the crew of a ship called the SS Arry.
Yes.
Now, this now was, I'll tell you where I got this from now, was there's a guy called James Quain wrote this bit, and it's in the John Young collection, we call it. And James Quain, I don't know James, I'm not sure who James is, but he does a lot of stuff, and especially there was a journal called the Ardmore Journal, and it was just some fantastic stories. I see Tommy Mooney, our good friend Tommy, did some of the illustrations there as well in it, and there's a lot of people put a lot of work into it as well. It's just in a fantastic piece of work anyway. But just, Noel, as I said, I won't hold you with this one. Just as I said, anybody in Ardmore graveyard, they're visiting their own tower, head up to the very corner, the very top corner, that's the easy way to say it, and then you'll see it.
You actually pass the round tower, do you go up along?
Go into the graveyard where the round tower is, and really just head for the very top left-hand corner, we'll call it. You know, the far-off corner at the very top, and that's where they would say this grave that we're talking about. So really just, and I wasn't too sure about the story until we got into it. So I kind of read a little bit about the story as well anyway, because this all happened in 1947. And 1947 now is 2 years after World War II. So the war has just kind of finished. But in 1947, Noel, there was a huge freeze. There was a big freeze.
There was, and I can remember actually a contributor to this particular programme, long since gone now, the late but great Charlie Flavin of Ballintosig in Inch.
Yeah.
And he was meticulous about keeping records of the weather. And he kept records, a meticulous record of the years preceding 1947 and after 1947. Okay. And he said, 1947 was the most unusual year.
Yeah.
Very, very unusual year as regards weather, because we had a brilliant summer but a terrible winter.
Yeah, and that's what it said. And it was this was European. This wasn't just Ireland. This was the whole of Europe had this. So we talk about global warming and
all this. We had it then.
You know, we had it. We had it then as well. But because what they said was heavy snowfalls brought basically life to a virtual standstill. And as I said, this is Ireland and Europe. And it lasted over 2 months.
Yes,
so it was
I believe so.
You know, we get, you know, a day's snow and we're fed up of it after the second day. They had like 2 months of this as well. And because of, I suppose, the end of the war, it was still there. This crisis was compounded by the shortfall, we'll say the shortage of fuel and foodstuffs.
Yeah, it was called, did they call it the emergency, I think, yeah, did they?
I'm not sure.
They called it, you know, after the war and during the war, the emergency.
It was during the war was the emergency, definitely. Yeah,
but after that, of course, rationing still continued on, and there was a fierce shortage of materials and things and after the war.
But even it said, like, you know, it was so cold that they said, there was one story I thought was very good in Clonmel, in the GA pitch, and the GA lads came there one Sunday morning to play their game, and they found out the goalposts were stolen. But what it was, they cut them down, some people cut them down for wood.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, you know, it was hard times.
It was that bad.
And that was it. So, but go back to the Arry, we'll say, on the morning of Saturday, the 8th of February 1947, the steamer Arry left Port Talbot in Wales. And it was heading heading for Waterford with a cargo of 600 ton of coal. Now, they were really badly stuck for coal, and it was heading for over for with the coal. There was heavy weather, you know the way, and this is one. And it's a short trip, like from Port Talbot, we'll say, to Waterford. Wouldn't be a very, very long trip anyway.
The port of call was actually Waterford City.
So that's where it was heading. Unfortunately, it never arrived there, you know the way. So, but the heavy weather on the way to Waterford caused the cargo to shift. So obviously when the wave hits the ship and the whole ship leans over.
Oh, of course, leaning is to port or starboard or whatever the case may be.
And what happens was it listed the port. Now, I'll just go into this now a small bit, guys, because anybody that's nothing nautical will say with them. If you're sitting on the back, which is called the stern of the boat, and you're looking forward, which is called the bow of the boat, anything on the left-hand side is your port side. Anything on the right-hand side is your starboard side. And the easy way we used to remember this as well was I left my red port bottle of wine on the on the dock, and it's left port and red. Because the light you'll see is if the boat is to the side, you have two lights on it as well, green and red.
Yes.
So red is the port side, green is the starboard side.
Yeah, that's kind of universal, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's like if you look outside and tonight, even there's a boat passing, if you see a red light, you know which
direction. You'll know which way it's going.
It's on the left-hand side, you're looking at it, so you know which way it's going as well. Actually, do you know, just a very small one there, because I left my red port. If anybody just... totally off the subject, if anybody wanted to learn the planets, what I always say is Mark's very enraged, Mark's jumper shrank using new powder. So that's Mark's very enraged is Mercury, Venus, Earth. Mark's jumper shrank, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn using new powder, Uranus, Neptune and Pluto. So it's a very easy way out. And they're the planets in line, by the way.
Yeah, I think everybody has something like that, because
I couldn't remember them.
So I know, I think we were all the same, actually. And the same actually applied to the colours of resistors in an electrical circuit. And there was an old thing that I learned from Bobby Chappell, and it was blacky brown runs over your garden, but violet gets whacked. And they donated the colours, different colours of the different sizes of resistors. So it's amazing the little things that would stick in your head
I made up my own, like Roy Gibb. I always say Roy Gibb is red orange. It's the spectrum, the colour spectrum, red orange, yellow, green, indigo, blue. You know the way Roy, and it's just if you think of somebody's name called Roy Gibb.
It's
just the spectrum, colour spectrum. I do the same as well.
Very good. Back
to the Arry again. We'll keep going after poor old Arry anyway. And back to the Arry, and we'll say the boat listed over, so to the port side, to the left-hand side, as we call it.
Yes.
And so what they did was the captain said, right, pump water into the starboard. So there would have been tanks in the starboard side of it as well.
Kind of ballast tanks.
And what you do is you pump water then into that side of it.
To try and rightify it,
It'll try and bring it over, but it didn't. You know, the way, this is one of the problems there. So it's, after a while now, they tried everything, actually, to be honest with you. And eventually it was said, listen, this boat is going to go down. So let's take to the boats. Now, one things will say there was a boat. There was a boat on the starboard side, a lifeboat, and there was a lifeboat on the port side. So this guy in question that we're going to be talking about here today is a guy, a Polish little lad, and he got into the port side boat with the crew, his own crew, and then half the other crew got onto the other side with the captain as well, into the starboard side.
How many was on the boat?
There was 15 in total.
15 in total. So it's quite a small frigate, so like, I suppose.
It would have been, but and unfortunately 12 are buried in Armagh at this stage.
My goodness.
And two were still missing and one survived.
My goodness.
So that was the whole story. So it was so what it said was, of the crew of 15, 9 men went into the port side and defeated the starboard lifeboat, and the other 6 men, including the captain, is still unknown. You know the way, so obviously they drowned.
But it got into difficulty, I suppose, coming into... it got as far as, I suppose, what...
Well, the fact that it was leaning...
Was it blown off course, I wonder?
But it was... Well, what it was just a huge storm, but you see, even the fact that the guys that survived initially got into the port side, so the boat would have been leaning over, so anybody in the starboard side, it would have been trying to drag down the side of the boat because it's not leaning properly. You know, you're not going straight into the water. You had to do it. So it was just a big storm. That was basically it. So they would have... Old boats as well. I'm not sure the age of this boat, but it probably took on some water as well, you know what I mean?
So but would it have got into difficulty, obviously, you know, if it's going from Wales to Waterford.
Yeah, Waterford, so it would have been down through the Irish Sea, you know, which is...
But it would have been blown off, a good bit off course if it landed around the Ardmore side, wouldn't it?
Well, the ship didn't. So they reckon, and this is where the whole thing, so they reckon the ship went down near the Salties, near Wexford.
Oh, go away.
It was just the lifeboats and kind of the bodies, we'd say, I suppose, came in. But because what they said was about 8 o'clock, 8 p.m., 8 a.m. on Wednesday the 12th, the ship's lifeboat came ashore, one of the ship's lifeboat came ashore at Ballymacart, in Old Parish, and in it was a Polish guy called Jan Duruku. I hope I got his name right anyway.
Jan Duruki.
And he was a 19-year-old Polish sailor, but he was really suffering from exposure and a state of collapse. I think he climbed up a steep cliff and kind of staggered to a farmhouse of the Horgan family. And they brought him, we'll say, back. So they brought him, or they called obviously somebody, and they brought him to Dungarvan, then to the hospital.
Yes,
in
Dungarvan.
So, and do you know something? His story, and it's a sad one as well. Like, this is the whole kind of, he was like, this is a young lad, a 19-year-old boy, we'll call it, you know the way?
Yes.
And what he said was his account, and this is, I'm going to read this guy's for you as well. He said, most of the men were likely clothed, having abandoned the ship in haste. Now, I'm a bit surprised with that because,
of course,
you know, if it starts to go over,
you just grab what you can and go.
And I suppose it was so cold, they were all inside in the ship, and the ship would have been hot actually inside in it as well, you know the way? But then they were told, into the boat now, so I'd say they're probably afraid to go back down to the hold get their stuff as well, because
some possessions after them,
absolutely, yeah.
But it's amazing that they actually came with from Wexford.
There would have been.
The storm would blow.
There would have been fairly quickly as well if you were drifting fairly quickly as well, because the boat is like a little sail in itself, Noel. So it would have been. Yeah. But what he said was the night. That night they drifted on rough seas and a cold easterly wind, so the easterly wind was pushing him carrying snow showers with it. Jan pulled tarpaulin over himself and fell asleep that night. Next morning, next morning he awoke for a terrifying realisation that he was the only person alive on the boat. All the other 8 men that were on the boat with him were dead.
Died from exposure.
And I think they were dead sitting up. They were still sitting on their seats. Exposure. Do you know the way I saw it? And it said, poor old Jan, he was afraid of dead people, I suppose, as a 19-year-old boy.
Of course.
So he pushed all the bodies, we'll say, overboard. And he was left alone then on the boat by himself until it came into Ballymacart at Old Parish then as well. So, geez, you know the way it is.
Jeepers, what a story. Huh?
So he was the only one. Like, he was lucky enough, he pulled the tarpaulin over himself because he was the only one that survived. And it's a pity all the other guys, you know, didn't just do the same thing.
Do the same thing, huddling
together.
Yeah,
huddling together, you know, body warmth and all that as well. It said during the weekend, 11 other members of the crew were washed ashore between Ardmore and Youghal, including several at Monterey. So this was taken in Youghal, Ardmore. I think even Knockadoon, there was one or two over Knockadoon. They said all the bodies wore life jackets and the verdict of death was exposure rather than drowning. So nobody drowned. And you know, even with the, and it says here, of the crew 15, 12 are buried in Ardmore and two are still missing. And even,
my goodness,
even during World War One and World War Two, that's what they actually said was they, you know, with all the shipping that went down, that nearly, I think it was like something like 80 or 90% of all the sailors that died of exposure, not from drowning. Do you know the way? So it was, exposure is definitely one of the killers of the water as well.
We look out of the water here, I suppose, and even now, should we look, we see some of the sea swimmers going in, you know, but like. You know, that's near the shore, I suppose,
absolutely.
Number one. And number two, they don't stay in there for very long. No. But I suppose picture the scene if you were out there with scantily clad, so to speak, now, you know, but way out there.
But even the swimmers today, like, they know their limits as
well.
Oh, definitely,
exactly. You know, when the body temperatures are dropping, get out, like.
Absolutely.
And that's it, like, but...
Yeah. And even, and it's a funny one because, like, we'll say, you know, sometimes we get a lovely April and all that. The water is, it's at its coldest in April. That's the, because it takes so long to cool down.
It reminds me, actually, to tell the truth, and I often can make the parallel with the scene, a storage heater. Very slow to warm up.
But once it's,
but once it warms up, it keeps its heat, and into next, we say, into November, December, it could be still quite, I won't say warm, but still quite tepid.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, come April, it'll cool down and it's very slow to heat up again.
Yeah, absolutely. It just takes so long to do it. But everybody forgets that. Like, April is nice, you know, you can walk around with a T-shirt, but the water will be at its coldest then. You know, the way it's after taking 6 months really to cool down, really, that's the way it is. But
and of course, it depends, I suppose, very much too on the tide and the tide, I suppose, the weather we're having, the tide, movement of this of the water itself, isn't it?
Well, it would. And we'll say just the whole, I suppose, like if there's northerly winds coming down, it's going to be colder again. If it's coming from the south, you know, you're going to bring up hot water as well with it as well. So it's quite, I don't really get into the water. I wouldn't do what the annual swimmers do as well, and even the
daily swimmers,
the Christmas Day swim. Even I used to do with the lifeboat, but I used to have a lovely suit on, a dry suit and gloves and helmets and everything like that. So it was nice to be able to.
They said that the river water is
colder.
Is colder, right? Yeah. The water coming down, we say, is colder than the sea.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is, and it's really freezing. You'd be surprised. And there's a difference then, would say, we do swimming and diving. People, you're more buoyant, obviously, in the sea because of the sea salt. So people get kind of, it's a bit dangerous. Like, people swimming in the sea all their lives and then they go into a lake and they're in trouble because they're sinking. You know, they can't understand, why am I sinking so far down? While the people who swim in lakes, fresh water lakes and rivers,
the salt.
they have a ball when they come down to the beach because they're nearly bouncing around the top of the water
Dead Sea, you nearly walk across the Dead Sea.
Yes.
On account of so much salt in it, you know. But again, I suppose, people too, I suppose, like when they are washed overboard, when they are getting into difficulty, I suppose the biggest thing is panic.
Well, it is. And then kind of what they said is you kind of come to the realisation that it's not going to happen. You know, I'm not going to live through this. And, I know they say that it's more serene than as well, kind of, you know, when the time comes. But do you know what? It's... It's a lot. Because, we can't really say no, you know, when it happens. But a lot of people do say that it goes calm for themselves and then they were saved, you know, the way. So some of them were saved then afterwards. But, so the poor old, poor old Jan there, as a lad of 19, you know, I'd say he never forgot that experience as well anyway. So it's just a sad one, but it's a good one too. If you're in Ardmore, just pop up and see the graveyard, the grave. Yeah. One of the guys, there was 12 of them in the grave, and then I think one of them, the family came in, reinterred it, but he's still there as well. He's still in the graveyard, very close to his comrades as well anyway, but he's in his own grave now at this stage as well.
But of course he lived to tell the tale, and he told the story to the Horrigan family, I think.
He did, but he lost, he was in Dungarvan Hospital for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And I think from memory, I think his leg was amputated or two.
I think so. I remember John Young talking about him actually before, and he said, I think his leg was, but he wasn't on Gavin for quite a bit.
He was there for a long time. So, you know the way, and I don't know anything about the man now, or, you know, his family or any of that, or whatever happened, because obviously he might be still even alive at this stage, because in 1947 he was 19, so he's still, you know, not a very, very old man still at this stage. But I hope he is, you know, for himself anyway as well. But that's the story of John, and they are more. Please go up there as well, you know, if you're visiting. It's well worth it. It's really worth it. And just go over and have a, you know, a chat to the lads there in the grave, as we say.
Yeah, and as I said, that's exactly about it. Jan Jarucki. The story of Jan Jarucki, yep. And indeed the loss of the SS Ari. Okay, listen, we're going to take a break, and indeed we'd like to thank you very much for coming
Thanks very much, talking to
me. And indeed next week again we'll be going a little bit deeper.
We won't be scratching the surface
of the sea. We'll be going a little bit deeper.
About 45 metres deep, actually.
About 45 metres. We're certainly looking forward to that. Mike, once again, appreciate you coming in, and indeed thanks very much for being a part of the programme. And again, the series is called From Knockadoole to Ardmore, So Much to Do and See.